The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 535, for Sunday, January 11th, 2015. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, cool stuff found. We answer your questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We share your questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We dissect your questions, tips, and cool stuff found. In fact, we spend the better part of an hour and about 15 minutes obsessing over your questions, tips, and cool stuff found. And that is what we do with the primary goal of having some fun while we learn some things together. And we're not going to put a limit we're not going to set the bar. We're just, the goal is to learn some things, and I'll let you level set on what that is. This episode is sponsored in part by Lynda at lynda.com/mgg. That link gets you 10 free days of Lynda's excellent training. We'll talk about that a little later. Folks at iMazing at DigiDNA, you get 20% off of iMazing with coupon code MGG. And of course, sponsored by Squarespace at squarespace.com/MGG. And the coupon code there, MGG, gets you 10% off. So we'll talk about all of those later today in the show. Here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in rather chilly and icy and freezing Fairfield, Connecticut, this is John F. Braun, but then throwing it back up to you.
Yeah, here in Durham, Hampshire. New Hampshire, where it's just like Miami Beach without all the nasty heat and humidity. Is Pilot Pete.
Don't forget that pesky sunshine.
That's right.
That they got.
That too. So thanks for having me, guys.
I'm glad you're here.
You know, it feels like I haven't been here since last year or something.
That's been, that's right. That's something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. So we'll see how we do. I was telling the guys before the show that not only am I on lack of sleep because I flew back from CES, but I had a gig last night in a smoky club because it was a private thing or whatever. So people can smoke in there. Oh, yeah. So I feel like I smoked a pack of cigarettes. I say that I've never smoked a pack of cigarettes. I think some total. I can tell you how many cigarettes I've smoked in my life. It's two. Well, it's one and a half because I threw up during the second one. So I have to imagine that this is what it feels like to have smoked a pack of cigarettes. But
it's amazing how immune or how we've lost our immunity to that, though, because I bet your parents smoked when you grew up, you know,
my
in
mom
the car
did.
With the windows up and all that stuff and in the home, and you never smelled it.
No,
it never even occurred to you.
And it never bothered me singing or anything until after I had stopped, after I lived in states where there wasn't smoking.
Right.
And then when I came up here, New Hampshire still allowed smoking 10 years ago.
Right.
So it had been 10 years since I played in a club with smoke and sang and all of that. And it actually took me a while to figure out what was going on. I thought I had some like bronchitis anyway.
Yeah.
How you doing, John F. Braun?
Like I told you, just trying to stay warm.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Preventing everything from freezing.
Everything from freezing.
Yes.
That's good. That's good. So I was at CES last week, John, out in Las Vegas there, out in La La Land. My feet are still sore, and in addition to all my other physical ailments that I might have from being
What did they do to
here.
Your feet out there, Dave?
They made me walk a lot.
That's just rude.
Yeah.
They should have put you in one of those self-driving cars or something.
Oh, dude. I wish there was a way to figure all that out. But I saw some cool things. There's lots of things that actually exist that I'm going to be able to get my hands on and test, and then we'll talk about those. So I'll pretty much skip that stuff for today. But I saw a couple of very cool things that don't yet exist. And as part of they have at CES several different sections of the convention, and one of them focuses on really, really early stage startups. And so there were some cool things. For example, a pair of earplugs that you wear while you sleep that block out like 70 decibels, which is not impossible to do, but they're Bluetooth earplugs, and they have little speakers in them that you connect to your phone so that even while you're blocking out 70 dB worth, you still hear your alarm. you still hear any notifications you want to hear, and you obviously can set all of that stuff. So I thought that was pretty cool. It was a company called Hush that is doing that.
That's working cool. on it. Would you be able to listen to the Mac Geek Gab too?
You could. Yes, that's right. Yeah, I mean, they're right. It's Bluetooth earphones, right? But they've really worked on making them comfortable, so they say, to, you know, so that when you lay down, it doesn't feel weird to have these things in your ear and all that. So, that, you know, it was one of those. Just, it's things like that. Things like, there was a Bluetooth mouth guard from a company called FitGuard that I saw. Should be out in September. Again, all of this is assuming the companies
survive.
Yeah. I mean, they don't have a product that they're selling yet. So it requires whatever their funding is. And, you know, there's lots of catches there, but what they're doing, it's $100 and it's again, Bluetooth connected. It's got a zinc battery in it. So that if in fact you ever were to swallow the battery, it's not poisonous. Well, this is an important thing. Listen, you're putting lithium a battery ion, in your mouth,
you know, yeah,
and you're going to get hit, right? So it's for kids to use, mainly targeted at youth sports. $100 for the mouth guard, the charger. It's an induction charger, and a case for the thing. And you know, that's not that much more. We pay like $30 or $40 for a decent mouth guard for our son. So, you know, to pay $100, and what this mouth guard does is it measures impact, both cumulatively and also per hit. And you can set a level where the thing will light up. So while the kid is out there on the football field or on the ice or whatever, you know, whatever game he or she is playing, you know, kids don't typically self-report minor concussion symptoms. It's just how it goes. And so to be able to say, okay, well, when an impact like this happens, light up, that at least tells the coach, you got to, you know, eval this kid. He did take a real hit, you know, check this out. So I think it's pretty cool. And then of course you can download historical data from the thing and go nuts and examine over the course of a, you know, a season or even a game or, you know, whatever you want to do. Things like that. Cool stuff.
That's awesome. You
know? Yeah. It's fun going out and seeing these things. Again, some of them, many of them probably won't exist. I think those two will actually make it. They seem to be fairly stable in terms of their funding, but you know, who knows, right? And then the last one that I think will make it, that again falls into this you can't quite get it now thing, it's called Smart Wheels. John, it's like a Segway, but it has no...
I saw you trucking on it. You posted many pictures. Thank you so much. But yeah, I saw you boogieing around on it. I guess there's a short training period where you got to, kind of like a Segway, where you got to understand how to work it. And then it looks like you were just zooming down the hallways there.
You saw my short training period. I think I had been on it for about 4 seconds by the time Jeff started filming. But yeah, you stand on this thing and you just sort of lean your toes forward and it moves forward or backwards and it stops. And it's pretty cool, but it's $1,200. So like a third the price of a Segway, 22 pounds. So you could even travel with this thing. You could, right. You could put it in carry on luggage.
Sure.
Right.
So it's going to fit in the overhead, sir.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, we could let the flight attendants use it to get up and down the aisle.
Oh, that'd be good. I'd like that.
Oh yeah. That'd be good. Well, anyway,
the thing I saw, Dave, and maybe next year, maybe I'll join you at CES.
Do you like traveling, suffering, sir?
Yeah. I think I could offset the suffering with, if I can understand how, and it looks like, you know, the team that was out there, I think there were four of you, right?
Three.
You know, it's like drinking from a fire hose. You got to figure out how to manage your time or otherwise, you know, you're lost.
But, correct.
The one thing I saw is that travel, you know, compared to where we've been before, like San Francisco or Manhattan, travel in Vegas to me is a big pain in the neck.
Oh, yeah.
And I think you've seen this is that they've actually, I think, banned Uber and Lyft and other services like that because they have a big cabbie lobby. So getting around is and the monorail only goes to certain places. So getting around is more difficult than I think it needs to be.
Well, especially when Vegas is that crowded, right? The issue with CES is 175,000 people came to town this year, which I think, depending on who you talk to, it's either CES or the Super Bowl is the biggest influx of people into Vegas. And New Year's Eve is right up there. So, you know, Vegas is reeling from New Year's. CES starts. But yeah, you know, at the wrong time of day, a cab line could be 2 hours long. And like you said, John, that's it. And you know, in Vegas, you can only hail a cab at a cab stop. You can't hail a cab on the street. And there's all kinds of rules about that. And some of them are, like you said, just, you know, because the lobby controls things, but also some of them, it makes sense based on the flow of people. But yeah, it's difficult. We stayed at a hotel that was close enough that we could walk to most mm-hmm. of the convention center, and that helps, but it's still, you know, it's a long walk. Everything's a long walk in Vegas, but yeah, it's worth it. It's,
and then, as you pointed out too, casinos aren't necessarily designed for you to get through them easily.
No, in fact, they are specifically designed with
to slow your wallet down.
Yeah. To make you so confused, you just want to stay. So anyway, you know, it's all good stuff. I want to talk about our first sponsor here, John, and then I want to get into some questions. But our first sponsor today is Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG is the link you'll go to get to 10 days free worth of Lynda's free access to Lynda's training. And this is exactly what you get for 10 days is exactly what you would get if you signed up and paid for an account. And paying for an account starts at $25 a month. And these courses at Lynda are fantastic. And you get unlimited access for 10 days at this LYNDA.com, Lynda.com/MGG. You can view on your Mac. You can view it on your Windows machine right there in a web browser. You can view, they have apps for iOS or your iPhone or your iPad or your Android tablet. They've got all that stuff. They're adding new courses all the time. And these courses can be about anything. You know, we're geeks here. So certainly things like you want to learn about iPhoto or Aperture or Lightroom or Photoshop, right? That kind of stuff is there. You want to learn how to program. You want to learn Objective-C. You want to learn JavaScript. All that stuff is there. You want to learn just, they have courses about iOS 8, right? And you could just learn about iOS 8 or OS 10 Yosemite. They've got all that stuff there. But they also have things that makes sense to us and maybe are things that we don't know anything about, like, you know, finance. You want to learn how to invest? Well, they've got courses about that, and that, nothing wrong with needing to learn about that. In fact, that's a good thing to learn about. You want to learn about how to manage QuickBooks? Sure. There you go. They've got it right there. And these courses aren't just, you know, some dude with a webcam putting it on YouTube, right? These are serious professional courses taught by people that really know this stuff. It's really good stuff. They have an entire, you know, chapter outline for the course. They have, everything is transcribed, so you could actually follow, like sing along with Mitch. You could follow along with the person, which is helpful if they say something and you're like, wait, what was that word? Well, you can read it. They've got it right there. You can stop anytime. You can, you know, pause the course so that you've got the ability to practice something or even just go get a sandwich, right? So it's much better than taking a class in person in that way. And it's, you know, as I said, they're broken out into chapters. You can have it auto flow from one chapter to the other, so you just kind of cook through the course, or you can have it pause at the end of each chapter so that you do have a time to kind of digest what's gone on, practice a little bit, again, maybe get a drink, come back, good to go. So you got to check this out. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG is where you go. 10 days free access to everything I just mentioned and so much more. You know, if maybe you want to improve your skills for your job, right? Maybe there's a promotion that's sort of out of your reach because you don't quite have the skill set to do it. Lynda can do this for you. And again, 10 days free that they've given us to give to you. And then after that, it's $25 a month. I mean, it's just, it's a great price for a fantastic investment. So check them out, please. Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG. And we appreciate it. And so do they. Hopefully you will too. All right, John, let's see how my voice does today. We will, you know, it's a trashy day, I think.
Are you going to be trash talking?
We're going to talk. It's geeks.
We're going to be trash
talking. Trash talking geeks is what it is. That's right.
I think that's the title for the episode.
I think so. You know, it is 5:35, of course, is yet another palindromic episode, but I like trash talking geeks. That's good. Yes.
My MacBook Air is better than yours.
Why I oughta.
You think you can crunch that video?
But people have a problem with the trash, Dave. You would think this is something simple, but it's not.
No, Mark writes
out with
Mark writes. He says, "I'm having an issue in Apple Mail on my Mac. I have my email accounts set up as IMAP accounts. Everything seems to be working fine. I can send and retrieve my mail on all my OS X and iOS devices. But on the OS X device, when I delete an email by simply selecting it and clicking on the delete little trash can icon, the email either returns to my inbox within seconds or certainly returns the next time I open mail. Any ideas on how to fix this?" Yeah, so one thing to understand with IMAP, and I know we talk about this a lot, but it is an important fundamental tenet and of the way IMAP works, is your Mac is simply a client for the server, right? And whatever the server shows is what your Mac is going to show. And in theory, vice versa. So if you do an action on your Mac, for example, you take a message and read it, it changes that flag on the message from unread to read, and then that flag should be reflected on the server so that any other clients connecting also see that. It's a great little system, except when it doesn't work. Trashing a message is no different than filing a message in another folder. In fact, that's exactly what happens when you trash a message. It moves the message to another folder. However, if Apple Mail is looking to move the message to a folder that doesn't exist, it cannot move the message. It doesn't just magically know what the trash is. Sometimes it can guess when you set up a new mail account, but for the most part, no, it doesn't. So you might have to tell it. And the way you do this is highlight your that particular IMAP account's trash or deleted items mailbox. Go up to the mailbox menu and choose at the bottom, use this mailbox for, and then choose trash mailbox. You'll see there's about five things here: inbox, sent, drafts, trash, right? That's where you set all of the, and archive. That's the five that you can configure. And yes, you can configure these specifically. So it you might see sometimes, so hopefully that solves the trash problem. I have seen it where OS X Mail wants to label the trash mailbox as deleted items, but the server calls it trash. You might wind up with two trash mailboxes. Well, this is where you would sync that up and say, no, use this as the trash mailbox. And hopefully that solves it for you. So that's what I got on that one. And John, if you have more, take it. Otherwise, take it to Joseph.
I'm taking it to Joseph. And Joseph has one where I learned something, Dave. And I thought I knew everything about Unix and flags and files and stuff, but I didn't.
There's never a way for us to know everything.
I mean, almost.
Unless you go to lynda.com. Yeah.
That's right. That's the place to learn. Actually, you know what?
I'm wondering if lynda.com covers this. We'll have to see, or I'll see if I can find a Unix course, Dave. Yep. But I think this is a Unix thing. So Joseph wrote in and said, "Hey guys, Happy New Year." Yes, Happy New Year. "So I'm having this issue with my trash on my 2013 MacBook Pro running Yosemite. Normally when I have things in my trash that for whatever reason won't empty, I fire up the terminal and run these commands, which always work. And the commands are sudo space rm space dash rf, which is recursive and force, and rm of course being remove, and then he's saying tilde slash dot trash, and then another one that the slight variation. But basically, for the most part, that should work almost all the time, Dave, because sudo tells the OS, okay, hey, I'm the admin, or I'm giving you special permission, and I'm going to give you my root password or administrator password to allow you to do this, because a lot of commands, especially remove dash rf, is a potentially devastating command because it gets rid of everything. So they want to make sure that you're the right person, the administrator. But he said this time he had an external backup drive and he tried to do this, and he had a crash plan backup on there along with some other stuff. And for whatever reason, he tried, I think I can get rid of the rest of what he said here, but basically he had something in the trash that he couldn't get rid of, and that he tried sudo space rm space dash rf. He tried the commands that would almost in all cases work for him, And he got back an error, operation not permitted. And you may be thinking, huh? Because how can you overrule sudo rm-rf, Dave? I mean, I thought you couldn't. But it turns out you can. So this is what I learned, is that in Unix, so there is a flag that you can set, and I believe CrashPlan, which is the program that I guess put this in the trash, set this flag for whatever reason, and maybe it's a good reason, but there is a flag. So the long answer, just to get in the technical nitty-gritty and be geeky, because that's what we do, Dave.
It is what we do.
Is that you can set a flag on, I think, a file or directory that's called no change. And apparently, if a directory or file has the no change flag set, that overrules RM. Even if you say RM force, this says. So there are two ways to get around this, Dave. So the long answer is you could do a, and I found an article that talks about this. So the long answer and the complicated geeky answer is you could do ch flags space no UCHG, which means no unchanged. And then the directory or file in question. And that should then let you get rid of it. Or a quicker thing, and I suppose that they do this at a lower level. And I think we mentioned this in the past, Dave. It was a funny coincidence because somebody in another email message said, hey, you know, there's this utility that you guys may want to check out that helps you get rid of things. And it's called Trash It.
Yep. Yeah, I love Trash It.
What Trash It does, among other things, is I'm sure at some level, Trash It will do this CH flags, no UCHG thing to help you get rid of things. And you can find it at www.nonamedscriptware.com.
Yep. Yeah, Trash It's awesome.
The feedback we got was, that did it. That helped me. So I've never seen a file or directory get in this odd state, Dave. But I know that if this ever happens and it says operation not permitted, I'm going to get Trash It.
Yeah. Oh, it's great. I leave it. I've had it on since we first mentioned it and Cool Stuff Found, however long ago that was. And it lives on my desktop. And whenever I have a problem, I just bang and it makes life way easier. It is a good thing.
I got to get that. I've been using the terminal commands.
Yeah. In the chat room, one of our listeners, John, mentions that you can also try, and this may or may not work depending on how protected the file is, but one thing to try is instead of just doing empty trash in the Finder, hold down the option key and do empty trash, and that will do a secure empty trash, right?
Or it
overwrites locked files is typically what that does. So it's again worth trying. Certainly. 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 MacGeekGab.com/stream is, it's typically where the chat room is, isn't it? All right. Let's play this audio question here and we'll see where we wind up.
Hey, Dave and John, hope you're having a good time out at, CES. And, I wanted to ask a question in the don't get caught category. I'm calling on behalf of a friend, and he has, go with that, iTunes Match, and has a bunch of personal movies that were burned into his iTunes library. And with iTunes Match, if you have a movie as such, it tries to upload it, realizes it doesn't have a match for it, and says this can't be uploaded, which is fine, don't want it to be uploaded and shared. But now, does Apple have a record of your burned movie collection that's either residing on their servers, et cetera, or at least knowing what's in your library. So if the bad guys ever come knocking or subpoenaing, know about your movie collection now. And is it a good idea to go away from iTunes Match then cancel the subscription so that you can keep your collection just within the confines of your own home, even though it's not being uploaded and shared? It's still showing the title and the name of the movies as just not available. So I don't know how all that process works. So if you could kind of have a conversation on that, I think that would be a good one to share with our listeners and get your feedback on that. So that's where you cut me off. If you need to reach me.
All right. We will cut you off and leave it there. So this is an interesting thing. Just for clarity, it's not iTunes Match that does this. iTunes Match is for music files only, and has nothing to do with video. This is something that Apple calls iTunes in the cloud, which is effectively the same thing, but you don't need an iTunes Match subscription to take advantage of this, at least not as I've seen. What it's for is if you have movies in your iTunes library that you've purchased, it will sync them with copies that iTunes has. It will essentially say, ah, yeah, you've got this. And then if you're out and about, you can go and download a copy of that movie, assuming it's still available in iTunes. And, you know, movie rights change all the time for things like that. But it allows you to, you know, if you're traveling, you want to download a movie that you bought to your iPad, no problem. Mostly it's for movies that you've bought from the Apple store, from the iTunes store. Sorry. However, as you found, it will try to match things that you have in your library. And sometimes it will do so, even with movies that maybe you acquired via not quite obvious means, certainly means that didn't come from the iTunes store. And yes, it does mean that Apple has a list of all of these movies. That's how that works. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, you kind of have to decide for yourself. I have no legal advice about that. It because you could have gotten these movies via means that all find their way into various stages of various shades of gray, right? If you bought the DVD and then used something like Handbrake or you know, anything similar to rip it into iTunes, that's one piece of gray area. Technically illegal, because in order to do that, you've bypassed the copy protection on the DVD, although that has never been challenged.
It kind of comes under the whole fair use thing.
Well,
of what you've bought.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, there are two pieces of law.
And I don't think they want to challenge that.
Correct.
Because they don't want to lose that.
They don't want to lose that. That's right. So I think in that sense, you're probably fine. But again, you know, we only play lawyers on a podcast.
Yes.
Okay. And we're bad ones, really, really bad ones. So I don't recommend you listen to any of our legal advice, but on that one, I think I would feel comfortable saying, yeah, okay, fine. But if you also have some movies that you didn't buy and you went out and, you know, used BitTorrent to download and put them in your library, there's not, you know, that's more like charcoal gray at that point. And it's more like black and white that you don't have the rights to this movie. So do you want Apple to know, and anyone that might be able to get information from Apple to know, that you have these? Again, the answer would be no, but I don't know that anyone is going to care. I mean, I think you might get away with it, but as you said, it is a don't get caught scenario, because if you do get caught, you don't really have a leg to stand on in that case. So
can I offer an observation, though? It's just,
of course,
it's just that in a case like this, like you said, he hit his topic on this with the word sharing. And it's once you share, that's when you're creating damages to these companies that they're going to get crossways with you over.
Yep.
More than it's just not worth them to go after Dave Hamilton for ripping his DVDs so he can watch them on his iPad.
That's correct.
But if Dave Hamilton's running torrent servers or, you know, sharing his movies out there, yep, to the general public, then you're financially damaging them and they're going to put a stop to it.
That's right.
And that's my humble opinion, speaking of bad lawyers.
What we're talking about with iTunes in the cloud is not a sharing setup, right? It's more saying, yep, we've done whatever cursory check we do, and we've determined that you have this movie, so you can share it with yourself. But that's it. It's not letting you share it with other people. So again, my guess is you would never get caught for this, but that doesn't mean it's not wrong.
Or that you won't.
Or that you won't. Or that I'm not wrong.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Any thoughts?
It depends on the scope. Yeah. It depends on the scope of sharing. If you're sharing with yourself or within your household, then I'm cool. If you're sharing with the world, then yes, I agree with you. That's naughtiness. And
it's not cool.
That's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, as you said, the law is fuzzy on this, but sharing within your household or transcoding your media to me is a perfectly legitimate expectation of you as a consumer. And I don't see anything wrong with that. But sharing with someone who has not purchased a license, that to me is bad. And that's taking money away from the people that create the content. So, you know, it depends on what your intent is.
I'll be honest. I have actually used BitTorrent to get copies of movies that I own because it's easier than ripping them.
Yeah.
If I want to watch a movie on my iPad, it's actually way faster for me to just download it from BitTorrent and put it on my iPad. And
to me, I see that, again, we're not lawyers, but to me, I see that as a legitimate use because you already have a license. You've already purchased it, right?
Yes, I agree with you.
Getting it in a different format, to me, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Morally, I feel right. Legally,
and morally, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But if you just downloaded it without purchasing it, then yes, then I would wag my finger at you because that's naughtiness.
It is naughty. That's right. It's just naughty. But, you know, here's the flip side of that. And it's the same thing we saw with Napster and all that other stuff is the movie companies do not want to give us DRM or copy protection free movies. And I would be willing to buy them with copy protection free, but it sucks. I mean, I can't, like, from iTunes, I can't buy a movie. Because I want to be able to put it on all my devices and have the freedom to do that the way I want. I want to have it on my Synology. I want to have it in, you know, everywhere that I use. So I have to buy DVDs in order to do that because I do have a method of ripping DVDs. I don't have a reliable method of, you know, breaking the copy protection on iTunes movies. Maybe there is one. I haven't looked for it. So.
And it goes back to it hurts the people who are going to play by the rules anyway, and the people who can get around the DRM are just going to do it. So,
right.
You know, I mean, and they're spending all kinds of money, time, and effort that seems to me could be spent elsewhere.
Yeah.
Better spent elsewhere.
Yeah. Anyway.
My humble opinion.
Yeah.
Like making good movies.
Like, yeah. Yeah. Or even making, you know, crummy movies that people want to watch.
Yeah.
I mean...
Because to lead out here, my frustration is that stuff that I have purchased, it infuriates me when I have to fast forward through 5, 6, 7 previews for something that I've purchased or someone has purchased for me. It's like, wait a second, I thought I don't have to see ads. Now, you know, certain titles like Disney and a few others, they make it easy. They're like, oh, yeah, hit fast forward or just say skip the previews. But items that force you to watch previews, especially for something that you've purchased.
Well, see, I'm going to argue with you there.
Depends whether it's subsidizing it.
Correct. Yeah. If the price that you paid is subsidized by those previews, then absolutely they have the right to force you to watch those. Just like we have the right to expect you to listen to the ads that we put into this show, right? Just like we have the right to expect that you view the ads that we place alongside the content at Mac Observer, right? I mean, that is the cost, and that's how that works. I don't suppose I can tell you that that's how it works at Mac Observer and at Mac Geek Gab.
Gets me is that a book can't force me to read previews of other books.
Correct.
They would if they could.
Correct.
I'm sure they would.
Yeah.
And sometimes I've gotten books that have a short preview of another title.
Sure.
I'm like, okay, but at least I could skip it if I want to easily.
Yeah.
And then I go to page one and I start reading.
Right, right.
All right.
It's an interesting discussion, right? Because, you know, trying to force a model onto people that aren't interested in receiving it that way creates... you know, a little bit of headbutting between the people who want to buy content and the people who want to create it. And, and yes, there needs to be some kind of, you know, financial arrangement or quid pro quo there. But we're in such the early stages of all of this. I mean, you know, podcasting's been around for 10 years. The web's been around for, you know, 20. It's still so early.
I see John's frustration, though, because it's a matter of respect and talent in the way you approach your audience. You know, as you talk about, there are, I think 1 week, 2 weeks ago, you called it a sponsored segment. And I went, that's better than an ad because it's a segment and you're talking about something that people that listen to this show are going to be interested in receiving. And you're not cramming it down their throats like some very intrusive ads that pop up or, you know, that sort of thing. And, you know, yeah, they can skip over it if they want to. But generally speaking, you know, my biggest gripe with the ads in this show and many podcasts are the fact that they cost me money.
Now I go, which means they're relevant.
Yeah. Bingo. Yeah. And so it's, again, it's the talent and the art and all that. But don't cram it down my throat.
Sure.
Put it there. Make it available to me. And when done respectfully like that, I think it's far more effective anyway.
And to be fair, I have no problem if you folks want to skip past the ads. What I've heard from a lot of listeners is the first time they hear a sponsor on the show, they'll listen to it. Or if it's a new product from that sponsor, they'll listen. But if it sounds like it's going to be the same thing, they just skip through. And that's why we've always had Michael Johnston, who thankfully does our AACs for us and adds all the chapters. He adds separate chapters for the ads. And we do that intentionally so that you can just easily skip over it if it's something that you either already bought, mm-hmm. or, you know, don't, it's totally fine. Like you said, there's a respect level here.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I know, without mentioning anybody by name, there are people who have approached you about advertising and you said,
no, thanks.
No thanks. Absolutely. You don't match up with, you don't approach your audience the way we want to approach the audience.
That's it. All right. Let's move on.
Rat hole.
It's a good rat hole, though.
Deep rat hole.
it's good.
Yeah.
All right. Very quickly, kind of back to iTunes Match here. Paul wrote in and said he's got a problem where he can't download. He's got 8,000 songs in iTunes Match, but only 500 of them are available for download are available locally on his phone. He wants to download the remaining, 7,500 songs. How do you do this? And it can be a time consuming process. As I mentioned, when I got back from that cruise, when I had my phone trying to download about 3,000 songs, it can be a real pain in the neck. The solution is you want to sync them locally from your computer, but you can't do that if iTunes Match is enabled on your phone. iTunes just won't let you. So what you do is you disable iTunes Match on your phone. You go into settings, go to music, you turn off iTunes Match. Then you connect your phone to your computer, either wired or wireless, however you've got that, and sync all the music that you want from iTunes. Copy it all over. It'll take however long it takes. It'll do it USB or Wi-Fi. Let it finish. Sync again just to make sure it's got all the crumbs and everything's good, because iTunes is wonky like that. Then go in and turn on iTunes Match in that same area of the settings. It will warn you. It'll warn you in a big way that it's about to delete all the music on your phone. That's not true. It will delete the music that's on your phone that is not in your iTunes Match library, but it will match it up first. And if the stuff exists on your phone, it will leave it on your phone. And I can say that from personal experience. So that's the way to get all your stuff there is turn off iTunes Match, do it, then turn it back on and heed the warning, be aware of the warning, but don't worry about it if you've got all your songs in there. So that's how that works. Speaking of sponsors, I want to talk about our second sponsor for this show, which is the folks at DigiDNA. iMazing is the app, imazing.com. And so iMazing is the new name for a venerable piece of software. A fantastic piece of software called DiskAid. iMazing was created because iTunes lacks a lot of functionality. And so if you want to really take control of how your music, your apps, your backups, your contacts, and all of that stuff are managed by your phone, do it with iMazing. It's totally the way to go. In fact, you could solve Paul's problem with this and move music manually onto your phone without using, the iTunes and the crazy iTunes Match setup and all of that stuff. It works really, really well. I use it all the time when I create audio messages, voice memos, and I want to copy them off. I just copy them off with iMazing. That way I don't have to deal with iTunes and it's got all this overhead and it's trying to sync and all that stuff. You can add music and playlists to any iOS device from any Mac or PC. You don't have to do iTunes sync or anything like that. it's now got a backup browser in it, which means you can go through it. You don't have to worry about losing your data. You can actually go through the backups that you've made with iTunes and go through and restore the contents of your devices, even if the device is gone. So it's built for both Yosemite and Windows 8.1 and works with iOS 8.1. And obviously the, you know, the new iPhone 6 and 6 Plus and all the new iPad. It works with everything. You know, it's just, it's fantastic. You want to manage your contacts with it. You want to manage, it's what iTunes for geeks should be, right? This is iTunes Plus. It's how the management, the syncing portion, the phone management portion of iTunes should be. Allows you all kinds of granular control. And these guys are constantly updating the app, adding new things. Coupon code of MGG gets you 20% off at iMazing.com. So that's a big savings right there. I highly recommend you go check it out. It is an app that John and I have been using. Like I said, it used to be called DiskAid. John and I have been both using it for a long time. We've mentioned it in this show. It's just got a new name. iMazing is it. iMazing.com. If you had purchased DiskAid in the past, you can upgrade potentially for free or at worst for only $8. Go to iMazing.com/DiskAid. And check your eligibility to see which way it falls for you. But that's a heck of a deal right there. And then you get all the latest features and everything. So check it out. iMazing.com. Use that coupon code MGG. Not only does it get you 20% off, but that's your way of telling them that we sent you there. And as always, we appreciate you doing that. So check it out. iMazing.com. Coupon code MGG. All right, John, you want to take us to... We had an interesting question that really just turned into a public service announcement here. You want to take us to Todd?
I think I will take you to Todd.
Sweet.
No, I don't think I will. I will.
Even better.
So Todd, this is actually an interesting lesson because it's, I've seen this happen a lot here. So correlation is not causality, I guess could be the lesson here, or at least the way he led into it. And I don't blame him.
Right.
So he said, "Hi guys, I'm not sure if these items are related."
Yeah.
They're not. "But I just upgraded my internal SSD in a Retina MacBook Pro 2012 13-inch from a 256 to a 480. All right. So there he's obviously offering, "Well, I did this and now this is happening." And what's happening? He's running Aperture and he can't see his images. And he showed me a screenshot. Now, the thing is with Aperture, or at least specifically with Aperture, and he's organizing his photos and projects, which to me is the best way to organize your stuff. But basically, he would click on a project, and then in the upper right-hand corner of Aperture are a number of ways to view your photos. There's a browser view, a split view, a viewer view, and he did the split view. And what the split view shows you is on the bottom of the screen, it shows you what I'm going to call a preview, which is kind of a baby version of your photo. And then in the upper portion of the window shows you, or should show you, a larger version of your photo. And it's a nice view to help you organize and kind of grok your stuff and process it effectively because you're getting two views. The thing is, he was not seeing anything in the upper window portion. And I'm like, well, that ain't right. That I've never, ever had that happen before. And so I was going to go down the whole path, and he went partway down the path. So the thing is, there is a repair option. I'm just going to mention this quickly and then move on to the solution. But if you are having problems with either Aperture or iPhoto, if you launch either one of the programs and you hold down both Option and Command, you will get an option that is called, I think, Photo Repair. And it gives you a number of options to repair your library. And he had already done that. Good, because he listens to us and he knows what to do. As it turns out, though, we got a follow up, and that's why I'm going to say correlation is not causality, is that it was not his upgrading to a newer SSD, because that just seems kind of weird. I mean, you know, unless data was lost. Apparently, he's also running this thing, which I had not heard of, Dave, I haven't used.
You had.
You probably heard of it.
Well, we talked about it.
Okay,
here.
But I haven't used it. Yeah,
right.
but I hadn't used it. But he is, and he's using a utility called Duet. And apparently what Duet does is Duet lets you extend your view from your Mac onto an iOS device.
It lets you use your iPad as a secondary display. That's right. And turns out Duet causes some issues with aperture. He uninstalled it. So, and the problem went away. Right. So that let this be a PSA, public service announcement, that if you're if you're having an issue with Duet, if you're having this issue with aperture, don't drive yourself crazy trying to troubleshoot it. Just uninstall Duet. I don't know if this also is an issue with things like, is it AirPair? I can't remember the name of there's a couple of pieces of software that will do this and let you
Air Display.
Thank you, Air Display. I don't know if this is an issue with Air Display. I don't know if they use the same tech to do it, right? But it's worth noting that there is this issue, certainly between Duet and Aperture, at least for Todd. So bear that in mind. Let that be your first step on your troubleshooting journey.
Okay. But he had enough of an instinct to say, what else have I done to my system lately? And I guess one thing was, hey, I installed Duet.
That's the trick. That's right.
So
yeah.
Part of the troubleshooting process, again, he only indicated to us part of what he had done.
Sure.
What he had changed recently, which was upgrading his SSD, but he didn't mention to us, nor did I really expect him to.
Right. But it is.
But he figured it out. He's like, gee, do I have anything display related? And I guess that's where he stumbled across the solution. So yeah. Nice work there.
Yeah, no, it's good stuff, right? Yeah, there's always that question. And I remember this from my consulting days, that someone would say, I didn't do anything and my computer started acting weird. Like, well, okay, sometimes it's possible that, you have a component go bad or something like that. But chances are you actually did do something. And so I felt like I was some kind of, private investigator where I had to do the detective work. So, okay. I'd back him off from it and we'd start talking about what else. I'm like tinkering around with the computer. I'm not actually doing anything because there's nothing to do yet until I know what they've done. And it's like, oh yeah. Hey, have you seen this? Have you done that? Did you install this? No, but you know what? I did install this other thing. Ah, okay. We'll go check it out. You know what? That's believe it or not, that's what caused your problem. Oh, I had no idea. No, I know.
You're
a psychologist. Oh, I had, were you muted or are you just too far away from the mic?
How about now?
Huh? I got nothing from Pilot Pete.
Wow. Huh. I can't hear Pete. It sounds like he's far, far away.
It does.
Far away.
It does sound like he's far, far away.
Did he pull his cable out? We were having some cable issues before.
We were, but
let me turn this one all the way up.
Dave. Yeah, do that. Let's. Did channel one on this board finally die? What do we got there, Pete? Anything?
Two, test.
Nothing.
Nothing. Deader than a doornail.
Yeah.
I'll sit here and be quiet.
Thanks, Pete. Yeah. You know what I'm going to tell you to do, Pete, is run over there. No. Grab that. See that on top of next to the cymbals, there's a little bag there. Try a different microphone. Right. I don't think that's your issue, but we will try that. So, fascinating.
Go ahead and mute me. That'll help.
Am I hearing him through your mic, Dave?
You are. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I've got massive compression on this mic, so it picks up, loud enough sounds in the room, but, I don't think we have a bad microphone with Pilot Pete, but we're willing to entertain that for a moment here. Let's see what we get. While Pete's doing that, which is really, I think, a fool's errand at this point. I think it's a bad port on the board, but it's not something I can fix easily because I only have four XLR. No, I got nothing.
Still muted.
Yeah, I know, but we're not getting anything for. I could tell you if we were.
I'll just sit here and be quiet.
That's what's really interesting is I'm seeing you register. You know what I'm going to do? Give us one moment, please. All right, we're back. I think it was a little dust in a button. Right, you back with us, Pete?
Yeah, I'm right here.
he's messing around with us. Okay.
I was moving my lips, but wasn't making any sound just to mess with Dave's head.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Who's your buddy?
Yeah. Good. Perfect. Awesome. Where were we? Are we all set? Are we ready to move on to Steve and John? I think we are, right? Sure.
I think so.
Okay. He says, I'm having a problem with login items on my MacBook Air. If I check off a program to begin its startup, such as Fantastical, Meteorologist, etc., The program usually starts the next time I turn on my computer, but eventually does not start up. I went to System Preferences and put these in the Login Items section. When I look after a few reboots, some of these are no longer in the list of login items. I can't find a solution to this. The only thing I can think of is to set up a new admin account, although I have never done that before. So it sounds like something is changing the login items plist, which is where these are stored on your Mac, without you knowing. Or it could be that the login items plist is corrupt and changes to it aren't properly being saved. There's a couple of things that I'm gonna mention here. Startupizer is an app that actually lets you manage the login items on your Mac. And that may be something that at least lets you see what's going on with this. And so we'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I'm not sure that's going to help solve it. The new version of Drive Genius will let you know when login items and launch items have changed. And that might help, but I'm not convinced that Drive Genius is watching these login items. I think it's just watching the launch daemons and the launch items folder or the startup items folder. So it may not be these things that are there. I don't know. It's the new version of Drive Genius is pretty brand new, and I haven't tested it with that. There used to be something you could set up a folder action on the,
yes,
on
the, you can, and I found that
you
Dave.
Did. Okay, yeah,
per your request. So,
yes,
and it's our pal Toffer Kessler
did
a little ditty for CNET back in 2012. But as far as I can tell, it applies to this day. And so, what it does is this article instructs you how to create a folder action that basically. So, folder actions are pretty powerful, but you got to dig underneath the covers there. But basically, you can set up a folder action to say, hey, if somebody adds something to this, let me know. And that's basically what this article tells you how to do. And then you can specify the folder or folders. And as you pointed out, Dave, we're not sure yet if the new Drive Genius 4, which so far I think is pretty slick. It adds some new features. I think it took some away, but I think for the most part, I'm pretty happy with the upgrades they made.
But that's serious. See, that's the thing is folder that we're talking about monitoring folders here. And for login items, it is not a folder. It is a single file. It's a home.
No, I understand that.
Right. So and I don't think that article is going to point us to it's just talking about folders. You can't monitor a plist file that way. Right.
Well, no, but you can monitor. Well, I think you can. So the thing is, there are a number of folders that have to do with items that are run when your Mac starts up. So there are launch agents, launch daemons, and startup items is the other one. And they're in both your system level and user level directory. And this article instructs you how you can select all of those.
Right. But, and I'm going to check this now. I'll say this one last time because I feel like somehow I'm not getting my point across. But the things that show up in login items in system preferences, I don't think they're stored as individual files in a folder. I think they are stored in home library preferences under Apple login items.
Right. I'm sorry. All right.
Right.
Login items and what I'm talking about, which are plist files, are absolutely
two different
separate things.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's,
but they're all things that happen when your system starts up.
Correct.
But they're in different places.
But the issue that Steven's talking about here is not those folders. Right. So I don't think these folder actions or even Drive Genius's thing are going to help. But maybe Drive Genius's thing is. So but that's the file you want to look at is home library com.apple.loginitems.plist. It's possible this file is corrupted. Pre-show, Pete, you asked me. Well,
I did have a question because I saw you wrote back and then I said, the question that came up in my mind in your answer was, is it just safe to delete that potentially corrupted plist file and let the system rebuild it.
You know what?
And your answer was maybe.
I think, and I stick with maybe leaning far toward the yes side of things.
Yeah.
I would move it. Not, I wouldn't delete it.
Well, there you go.
I'd move it out of the preferences folder. I'd quit everything first, move it out of the preferences folder, and immediately reboot. And you know, you've got it on your desktop if you need it. Sure. But I think it will recreate it. And that might be the answer. And this file's not all that difficult to look at. In fact, you can quick view it with just by hitting the space bar, and you can see it's kind of organized in a very hierarchical way. And you'll see that things like, you know, what you're looking for is the name string, which is at the end of each section. And there's a section for each thing that's going to be listed there. So you're going to find Dropbox and iTunes Helper and Text Expander. These are the ones I'm finding, right? You know, Crash Plan Menu Bar, those types of things. And so you know that if you've pulled these out, you might want to go and re-add those back in. But that would be my guess is, especially now that we're talking about it, I'm feeling like it's a corrupted plist file, unless something else is changing this file. And that would be the only concern, is that you've got something constantly writing to or replacing or restoring this file. That's not a good thing, right? I don't know. That's pretty crazy. Any more thoughts on this, John, before we move on?
No, the thing I mentioned was a sideline, but I think it's an important
one. Oh, it is.
Some programs add, and I've seen this. You and I have both seen this. Some programs, you know, you give them permission, but they change your login items, but they also change these other important locations,
right,
or both to do what they need to do when your system starts up. So,
right.
So right. It's good to look at all of those, but
no.
My guess would be it does sound like, I mean, if things aren't taking hold, then yeah, to me, it's a, you know, if something's not taking hold, it's a permissions issue.
That's kind of my feeling. Yeah. Or permissions. It's an inability to write to that file. Right. And so that's either, like you said, permissions or corruption, or something is backing out those changes. And it's possible, right? I mean, if you've hardened
just Yosemite
your system,
being Yosemite, right?
Yeah, right. Well, there could be that. But if you've hardened your system in some way that you know, this file is either not modified, if you've got the immutable flag set, right, the no change flag, then this file's unchangeable, mm-hmm. right? Like we talked about earlier. Or if you've got something that every time you boot up, it replaces this file with a known good copy.
Yeah, but he says it works the first time, and then it changes.
See, so, that's why I'm thinking maybe there's some, he's got some weird flag or weird utility that says, oh, nope, let's put this copy
back where you want it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Computers do what exactly where you said you wanted it.
Yeah. Computers do what we tell them. The trick is we don't always tell them the right things, or even more so, we don't remember what we've told them. But one thing that you can use, our third sponsor here is Squarespace.com. /MGG, and you could use Squarespace you could actually create a little log for yourself right there about things you do to your computer, right? And because Squarespace lets you host your own website, you don't have to know anything. The only thing you need to know, there are two things you need to know. Actually, there's three. So number one, you visit squarespace.com/MGG. The second thing you need to know is what you want to put on the web, right? And your site could be your own personal log of changes you've made to your computer. That actually would be kind of interesting. I would, you know, follow sites like that. What have you done? How have you done it? Then what are the repercussions of that? That would actually be kind of cool. So that's number two. You already know that. And number three is actually part of number one. You just remember the coupon code MGG, because you're going to get 10% off when you make your first purchase. But you don't need that initially, because you don't even put in your name at first. You just go and start creating your website. But when it's time to buy, you know, MGG is the coupon code to use. It gets you 10% off. Squarespace plans start at $8 a month if you go for a full year. And here's the deal. If you're going to start a website, you're not going to be moving it every month to a different host. And again, that's it. Squarespace is your design platform as well as your web host. And it all happens on the web. So sign up for a year, get it for $8 a month minus 10%. Right. So, you know, you're getting a heck of a deal doing it that way. And again, you know, Squarespace makes it super simple. If you are a geek and you have even little snippets of HTML code or something that you want to put in, you can certainly do that. Squarespace has all the functionality that you'd want and all the facility to do that and all the flexibility. However, flexibility, facility, functionality, there's your three F's for you. But they don't require it. In fact, it works really well if you don't do anything like that and you just use one of their beautifully written templates. They test these things for months before they release them. They make them work on the Mac, Windows, obviously, Android, iOS, and they're all responsive, which means that whatever size device you're viewing it on, the template is perfectly sized for that device. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to have a different, you know, like my website, I don't have to have mobile.m.davethenerd.com. It's all just www.davethenerd.com and boom, that gets you there. And you can see me rant about hockey referees and people shutting down music sites and all kinds of things. If you like that sort of thing, you'd probably rather read the thing that we want Steven to start here, which is a blog for all of that. So for all of the, you know, logging all the things he does on his computer, that'd be interesting. Probably far more interesting than my blog, but that's the beauty. You'd create whatever you want. Squarespace makes it easy. And if, you know, you're in there maybe 3-4 months and you say, I like this template when I started with it, but now I see they've got something new. I want to move to that. You just move to it. All your content just flows right into their new templates. It's beautiful. Works really, really well. And they've got 24/7 support via live chat and email. If you wanted to add something like e-commerce, you can do that too. They make it super easy. They've got integration with Google Apps. They've got a partnership with Getty Images. So if you don't have pictures, but you want to be able to pull things in, they've got access to them right there for you. Cover pages now so that you can have a beautiful opening page on your blog. And then in you go. You got to check this out. Squarespace.com/MGG. Don't forget the coupon code MGG to get yourself 10% off. And of course, as always, that's their way of finding out that that we told you all about them. So we appreciate it, Squarespace, and we appreciate it from you, too. All right, John. I've been looking forward to this one with Charles here. So let me find him.
I haven't.
You haven't, huh? Oh, boy. How are we going to do this here? I'm out of tea. This is bad.
Well, just because I've run into this, I ran into this problem.
Yeah.
Which is having, and the problem is your SSD is puny.
That's it. Yeah. That's basically, we've had several questions, in fact, this week about this. I'm moving from a hard drive that's larger than I'm moving to a new SSD that's smaller than the hard drive I came from. What do I do? How do I manage my data? What's best to put on the SSD? What's best to put on an external hard drive? And I've been living this way for years on my main machine, right? I've got a 256 gig SSD and then a 1 terabyte drive inside. And so here's my thoughts on this. On the SSD, I would definitely boot from it. There's no question. You know, you're going to get huge, huge performance gains by having your system not only boot from, but run from the SSD. I feel the same way about applications. Put your applications on the SSD too. They launch much faster that way. I also would put iPhoto library and iMovie library on the SSD. And the reason is that especially the iPhoto library, because
or Aperture.
Oh yeah. Right. Of course. Because there's lots of small little files, all these thumbnails and indexes, and it just runs faster because the SSD is built to deal with lots of small files. Your iMovie library, I would certainly consider putting movies that you're working on, things that you're creating there, but your archives certainly can sit on a spindle drive. There's nothing wrong about that. As far as your iTunes library or your movie library for movies that you're just going to watch, absolutely no real benefit to put those on the SSD. A hard drive is plenty fast. Even the slowest hard drive that you're going to get these days is plenty fast enough to stream or to deliver the bandwidth for an HD movie. So you really don't need to gob up all your space with that. Now, I left out documents. My feeling is your documents probably aren't that big when you've kind of ruled out all the other things we just talked about. And so you're probably just going to put those on the SSD anyway. But, you know, you're not going to be accessing hundreds of your documents simultaneously. So if you do need to put your documents, your pages, your Excel and all that stuff onto the external drive, it's not going to be the worst thing in the world for you. You may not even notice it, but I'd certainly do it. I'd put them on the SSD if you have room. So that's how I'm going to start this, John, but I'm curious what you guys think. So John, why don't you take it and then we'll bring it back to Pete.
I'm going to end it.
Oh boy.
Surprisingly, Dave, I'm going to add a lens to this.
Okay.
Surprisingly, I agree with you.
Oh,
well, first off, to me, system and applications is a no-brainer. You're going to get, you know, especially now that I have, now, of course, solution number one is just buy enough SSD to store everything, which, you know, with the price of them coming down, and, you know, I just got the shiny new 960 gig SSD, which is just wonderful. If you can do that, but it's still at the point where there's still, unless you hit on a sale, you know, from a friend of Mac Sales or someone, it's still kind of pricey. You know, and it pains me to see people have to make this decision. But if you do, so number one, I agree with you. System and applications, no question that they belong in the SSD because you're going to get super duper performance. I also agree with you that the iPhoto library or Aperture library and iMovie or other video. And so here's the lens that I want to add to this is that if you have photos or movies that you are editing, either accessing or editing, I would argue that the SSD is going to give you a benefit. A rotational drive may be able to keep up, but an SSD will be able to keep up better. Well, and then, like you said, Dave, the thing is iTunes and movies are kind of passive in that you're just consuming them. You're not editing them and you're not manipulating them. You're just consuming them. And I think most modern hard drives, along with, you know, SATA 3 in most modern Macs, is going to be able to stream or consume that content with no issue. So you can put them on the hard drive. And then with documents, yeah, I mean, you know, same thing. If you're dealing with a big Word file or a text file or something like that, or an RTF file, I think a hard drive is going to be able to meet your needs.
But it's also not going to be that. You. It's not going to be that big, right? I mean, a big Word file. What's it going to be? You know, 10 megs, 100 megs. I mean, that's a right. book.
yeah, a manual for right. maybe at work.
But,
you know,
right.
I got
but
some that are in the 80 to 100 megs. But, yeah. But you yeah. put that on the yeah. SSD. Well, it's because it's small enough. You can put it on the SSD. I
that's
guess
what
is
I'm what saying. Saying. Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't.
It's
you
not
know,
a space consumer.
But they're not. Yeah. They're yeah. not huge.
Yeah, but I like that you brought it up because to me, the because you're editing some of these files, whether they be photographs or movies, the SSD is going to give you that boost that you may not realize or you may be limited to by a rotational drive. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Any other thoughts on that?
No, not really. I was going to jump in and say maybe on the spindle drive with the documents. But again, that's just because I was thinking you're consuming it more than anything. And even if you are editing it, it's nowhere near like a video editing
right.
that you're doing or something. But,
right.
but for the convenience of having it there and always ready to go. I mean, I like having my flight manuals available to me right on my hard drive, but.
Well, yeah, you're so talking about really, a laptop scenario,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
which is
that's
much
true.
Different.
As a,
yeah.
As opposed to the.
Yeah. Charles was asking about, a desktop machine. So both drives are effectively always
sure.
accessible. But yeah, if it's a laptop and you've got to decide, you know, an external drive versus internal, there will be times when you don't have access to your external drive. So
right.
that then changes the decision tree quite a bit because the first thing that you put on the list is the stuff I always need to have with me. So but you know, there's other ways to deal with that too. We've got, where is it? There was a cool stuff found coming up, that I'm going to jump to here because it actually helps solve this problem. We were talking in the last show about, managing a Dropbox that's larger than your hard drive, right? I mean, it's similar issue here. And, yes, I'm vamping while I'm, oh, you know what? I know where I can find this. I got it. Yes, I'm vamping while I find this, but, it's a piece of software that Bruce wrote in about called ExpandDrive, ExpandDrive. And what it does is it allows you to use your cloud services like they are, you know, a USB drive connected to your Mac. And so it basically solves that problem we were talking about in the last show. So there is a decision to be made because, yes, now you have access to this stuff that's not directly connected to your Mac, but your Mac needs to be connected to the internet to access this stuff, right? And so if you need something while you're flying, well, you know, that's got to live on your laptop.
Well, that's now verboten, but I know what you mean.
Right. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to imply you're doing things wrong.
Someone were, say, in their private airplane.
Sure. Okay, so you can have a laptop going in a private airplane. You just can't in a commercial.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely verboten commercially now.
So, okay. That's new, right?
I'm pretty sure the FAA came down. It was very limited, kind of quickly. It came down. Don't quote me on that.
Pretty sure they did. I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
I just know for a fact that our company came down and said, verboten, you turn your phone off when you get to the airplane.
Sure.
And you don't turn it on again until you're off the airplane. Yeah. Same thing with laptops, verboten. Kindles, verboten. Just don't do it.
Interesting.
But we have the company laptop, the company iPad. That's now our navigation device.
Sure.
And all that. And guys are going, well, I could do it. You go, yeah, go ahead and play that and see if they're logging that or not. You know, I mean,
right.
See if that's worth it to you. It's not to me, you know.
Okay. So
they pay me enough money. No. I'm going to do what they want.
It's
me
not
to
a
do.
Technical. It's a distraction.
It's a distraction.
Yeah. That makes
just
sense.
Going away
what?
From it. Yeah.
Totally.
So, yeah.
Totally.
But
Dave,
you know what?
Yes, Sean.
I got to add something here.
Go.
So we're talking about, and I just found this article here, and I was experimenting with it. Why? I don't know. But I came across this. So you got a rotational drive, okay? They're, you know, have ample space for reasonable money, but they're kind of slow. Then you got SSDs, right?
Yeah.
But then you got something else, and I just experimented with this. Thanks to our friend Jim. No, a RAM disk. And because I got a whopping amount of memory in my MacBook Pro here, I got 16 gigs, which is probably more than I need. I decided, hey, you know, I'm going to look at a RAM disk on OS X. And again, our friend MGG Jim wrote an article back in 2013, you know, ages ago. But I actually experimented with this. And if you want performance, albeit temporary, making a RAM disk is the way to go, man. It's pretty cool. I was goofing around with it. And I did some benchmarks. And the thing is, you're going to get so you think SSDs are fast? The RAM in your computer is even faster. The only problem is it's relatively more expensive and you don't typically have a lot of it. But, you know, if you need some scratch space or high performance temporary disk space, and he actually pointed at, so you can either do magic from the terminal or they have a utility. I think it's actually an Apple script called RAM Disk Creator. And, you know, we'll link to Jim's article. But I just experimented with that during the week because I was like, huh, what do I do with all this extra RAM that I'm really not using most of the time? Well, there you go.
Okay, so
you can get gigabytes per second throughput on a RAM disk, again, because of the nature of the RAM in your computer. The modern RAM, you know, is running at very high speeds, faster than an SSD. And I think that'll always be the case just because of what it needs to do.
Yeah, I guess there would be limited... what I'm trying to think about is why, right? With OS X and the way that it caches things and you have more RAM than you will need in terms of the system being forced to page out to swap, potentially. OS X will cache stuff, right? So the benefits of a RAM disk are very limited, but they exist. If you actually have to work with a large file that's not too large, that it would fit in RAM, then you might get benefit out of that, right?
It's for instances where you need very high performance beyond you know, what's available via an SSD. And again, it's temporary. You know, once you turn the computer off, it's goodbye. But it's the fastest disk that you're going to get with current technology.
Yeah, no, it totally. Yeah. I like it. That's good.
Oh my gosh.
It's time.
Has this happened again? Oh my gosh.
Yes, it has happened again. It's all happening. It's like the zoo.
You know, and the only other thing on that was John.
What do you mean it's like...
Oh, go.
What do you mean about the zoo?
Wasn't that it's all happening at the zoo?
Oh, yeah.
Right? A Paul Simon and Garfunkel tune?
That's right.
Okay.
Oh, all right. There you go.
You got... Listen... So you got to, like I said, I'm on very limited sleep. So every now and then you get to see a glimpse of the thought train of Dave.
The mind map.
And I apologize for that. But this is actually normal for me to think about things like that. I try to keep it from you folks because I realize it's scary. So,
well, that's okay. I wandered off into Naven Johnson land when you were saying you only need three things. Remember from the movie The Jerk? I only need three things.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, paddleball game.
No, we're good. feedback at MacGeekGab.com is one of the three things that you need to know to send us email.
Feedback?
Really?
What's the second one?
I think Pete has it.
Oh, 206-666 geek.
Well, that's that.
You went off script, man.
You went off script. Second, well, let me try this again. Let me try this again. The first of three things that you need to send us email is feedback at MacGeekGab.com. The second, John, is
my favorite, okay. Dave, is feedback at MacGeekGab.com. But I think Pete has one too.
I like feedback at MacGeekGab.com.
It's almost like it was off the cuff.
Yeah.
That's right.
or you could send an email to that phone number and see how that works out.
Yeah, but what was that phone number now that you said it, Pete?
It was 206-666 geek, which is, John.
Wow, that 666 thing makes me nervous.
Sorry, man.
But 4335. But we're also on the Twitters, right?
We are. Matt Geekab at Twitter. John F. Braun at Twitter. Pilot Pete at Twitter. Dave Hamilton at Twitter. And Mac Observer at Twitter. It's all fun stuff. It's a great place to follow us all. I do want to thank Michael Johnston from the iOS Show podcast. As I mentioned earlier, he is the one who converts this show to AAC and adds all the chapters for you. He does a great job. We really appreciate it, Michael. Thank you so much. You got to check out his show. Also, Cashfly, CACAGFLY.com, provides all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you, and they are great people to boot. And with that, I want to thank everyone in the podcast marketplace here for this month. That includes Lynda, LYNDA.com/MGG for 10 days free. iMazing.com with 20% off the coupon MGG. Squarespace.com, of course, MGG, 10% off coupon. Also, Barebones at Barebones Software at Barebones.com. Smile at SmileSoftware.com. Gazelle at Gazelle.com. And, of course, Drobo. Great stuff that they're doing over there. Drobo and Connected Data. Check all that out at Drobo.com.
You know what, Dave? I just got a news flash.
What's
we just got
flash?
A winter weather advisory for Monday. And you know what that means, Dave?
What's that?
Don't drive like a moron, because if you do, you will get caught.
Made up.